unfortunately, wastewater engineer Harris, who's to present that, is not here at this time. As with items 5, 6, and 7, we're texting him and trying to figure out where he's at this moment.
Okay. Well, so much for it.
Yes.
We'll go back and we'll start on E1 discussion regarding notice of completion for water treatment plant at New Point.
Yes, yep. I'd like to give Justin about 3 minutes.
Won't even take that long. We're always cutting you short. Right?
Yeah, well, luckily this one doesn't need very much time. So we completed the Newport water treatment plant upgrades earlier this year. We went through all the startup activities, and we're just now filing the notice of completion. So it took a couple of months for the contractor to get all the as-bills together and make sure we all reviewed it, program files. So everything's complete now, and we'd like to issue the notice of completion and the final payment to the contractor. It's as simple as that.
And your firm are both happy with
the... Yeah, we've reviewed the documents, we've reviewed it, the electrical engineer has reviewed it, we conducted all the testing of the facility, so it's good to go.
Great.
Yeah. And the final payment, we were on budget?
Yeah, there was no change orders on the project. We were on budget, on schedule. We put together just an acceptance of work from our firm, just to demonstrate that we accept the project as well. It was a successful civil project, no issues.
Great. Now we'll go to E2, discussion of the procedure with the town will acquire sanitary sewers and facilities for track number 6274.
Turn this over to legal.
Thank you. So this is an issue that came up in September of 2018, where it was identified that 6274 track of subdivision known as the Harbor Bay condominiums. It was unclear as to whether or not anybody owned it, or we cannot demonstrate that the town had received ownership of it. So what staff was directed to do by the board at that time was to go out and make it so. And going out and making it so, we came up with a letter that came from the HOA that said, hey, we have the authority to do this. Here, we're willing to offer it up for dedication. And all we need to do is, all town needs to do is accept that dedication. And in performing the due diligence for that transaction, we discovered that Radar is not sure that the board necessarily has the authority to make that decision without receiving any additional authority from their members of the HOA. So that led us to pursue the transaction as set forth. We asked the HOA, hey, tell us in your documents as how you determine that you have that legal authority. In another track to pursue, we looked to any other available avenues of recovery to where the district would be able to acquire ownership. We took a look at the documents that were available, and it seems to be a fair conflicting in a few of the different documents. For instance, in the case of the subdivision map itself dedicates to the public utility service provider, we need easements for the public utility easements. We have documents stating that that the subdivision was actually accepted by the county on December 12, 1989. We have another document stating that the other two, the three in this overall subdivision, were in fact accepted by the county, which was the sanitation district at the time, on December 12, 1989. So where does that lead us? That leads us to a place where we are right now, where there is a crossroad. And the crossroad is that in order to make an offer and a dedication, we have to be able to identify an offer, and the town then has to consider that offer and accept it. We can identify that offer, and we can identify the acceptance of the offer. For two of them. The county definitely and unequivocally accepted the sewer facilities as dedicated for two of them in 1989. The third, which is the subject of this task that we were given by the board, is unclear. We can speculate as to what the intentions of everybody was, but we can't demonstrate that through any sort of fact or document that we can produce. So if the town were to decide to presume that there was an offer, That would be based solely on a presumption. It would not be based on any document that we can identify or recall to. It may in fact be true, but we can't make any sort of claim or determination that it is true because we haven't received any documentation stating such. The other method, which would be to require the HOA to demonstrate through the legal opinion of the registered California licensed attorney that that board actually in fact does have the authority to convey the sewer facilities to the district. District legal counsel would be satisfied with that letter as the authority being given, or that board has the authority to make that conveyance, and we would recommend that the board then consider that conveyance, and which would include an agreement whereby we would identify the obligations that either party would have with regard to the system, meaning we're assuming any of the ongoing operation and maintenance of that, and I believe it's already been inspected, but any repairs that we would have identified that would be probably incumbent upon them to make those repairs or something, some sort of arrangement for that. So the decision here is the recommendation that we're looking for here is that the wastewater consider these two methods that we've identified, the presumption method, which is we are presuming that there's a document out there somewhere stating that a grant of dedication was actually made, or which would be legal recommendation, pursue the path that we can demonstrate the legal authority so that the town as a board can make has the legal authority to make such a decision.
I got it.
And that was all under 3 minutes.
That's recommendation one.
Recommendation one is legal's recommendation, which was the recommendation that we can actually construct and demonstrate if we were required to demonstrate the legal authority of the board to accept a dedication, we would be able to do so with that.
I agree with that.
Is that a method? So we were talking on the board charter, they call method one method.
Yeah, I apologize. I was missing the staff report language. Yes, method one is the method we're recommending. Method two is a presumption method.
Okay. And staff recommended one.
Legal.
I'm asking staff, so I think that's the one that's listed. Pursue method one. And that's staff's recommendation.
Staff's recommendation is legal one's the preferential way, but if legal method one is not satisfied, that we consider method two because there's no risk to the town.
Okay. So that would, thank you. That would have been my question. So the right way to do this is I look at it, read it, and understand it in a layman's sense. The high road would be to go back and get a vote by the residents. If that would take away any concern with the board having the authority if the residents voted again. And I understand the difficulties for HOA to get that. It could take years and a lot of expense. So that would be the correct way. So we had some confusion as we went through, and now we get to a point we could clear that confusion, but it could take a long time. And I'm not sure that's the right way because the method one or two can get us to the same end result without exposure to the town, to the board, to the town. Correct? Is there any exposure at all taking method one to the town, either in retaliation for what we did, a lawsuit, any type of an exposure or liability in taking method one?
Method one? No.
Okay, because if someone comes back and challenges it, what do we do?
Method one is the getting the authority from the HOA board and having them conduct whatever their bylaws tell them to do.
Okay.
There's no risk of any challenge to that because the board has the authority as the CSD to accept offers of dedication for property, for facilities, for things that they have the authority to accept.
So if somebody, a resident, that would be challenged it 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 10 years, or just a time frame, they would then challenge the decision by their board, correct? Because their board is the one that's going to tell us that we can have this. Did I word that good?
So I guess may I give an example and then let see if we're on the same page. I see this as the same as does the town board have the authority to let a construction project in excess of the competitive bid threshold without competitive bid? Sure, you can contract for that, but somebody can challenge you and challenge you on the authority that you didn't have the authority to award that contract because you didn't follow the procedures that you were required to follow. And they will be able to demonstrate that you didn't follow the procedures because you failed to conduct a competitive bid. Here, if we go through our due diligence and we have confidence that the HOA board has the authority to grant what they're desiring to grant, which is the sewer facilities, from our legal standpoint, the board has the authority to accept that.
Okay.
If in the alternative, if we are to presume that there was an offer of grant for dedication.
Option two,
we're talking about now, method two. And the board were to accept this presumed offer, it's subject to challenge because if somebody were to say, how can you accept an offer that which you cannot demonstrate occurred?
Okay.
So you would lack authority to accept anything because there was nothing to accept.
Yes.
Provided nobody can produce the magical missing documents.
What would be the outcome of the challenge? If somebody was to challenge it and say you didn't have the authority to do this, what's the risk exposure to?
Well, the risk exposure to the town is that the town had owned it. That the transaction was void for lack of authority. So any ownership of that does not vest in the town, remains vested with the title owner of that facility.
So it's back on the HOA. They challenge it, they could maintain it.
Correct.
I'm okay. I'd still like to go method three that I mentioned, that is go get the vote, but I don't see any reason to go through that process. And I think method one will satisfy the needs.
And you don't move. So, with that, we're going to go on to E3 regarding the role of eight updates. As quickly as we can.
Okay, so I'm going to turn this into a few minutes with Mike.
Sure.
And Justin, if need be.
Okay.
And Welly.
Right. But, so, just real quick, Justin prepared a very nice draft report that we're still reviewing, and I went ahead and took one of the exhibits he gave us, figure one here, and Mike has asked me to look into a couple of potential well sites for well 8, which I believe at the last committee meeting he mentioned the plan was to have a standalone facility with the treatment system, the tank, and all of that. And so what I did for you was just kind of took a existing site that Justin sent over to us with the tank here on the upper right of the screen, I'm sorry, of the page, and then took the oleander, a picture of the oleander you have over here at well 2, that really does a good job of screening that whole building and put them together to show you this is how that facility would be screened no matter what, you know, obviously after 6 years of growth of the oleander, but that's how it would be screened. So a few of the sites that are identified, there's a school site at the very top of the page. I have spoken with the school superintendent. I've got a good relationship with him, and his response was that the only area they would have is an area in the upper northeast quadrant of their property, which is now a detention basin. And so we need to look at that to see if that would work for us. I've put a call into just below that. There's one called out with the red square, a villa site. So the landowners of that area, I've put a call into them to see if they're interested in either selling us a half an acre or granting us an easement. Haven't heard back from them yet. Moving down into the left a little bit, there's Tessa's Kitchen. So if you're familiar with Tessa's Country Kitchen, she has there. I have been in discussions with her. She is a willing, you know, seller of property or granting us an easement. She just wants to be sure that if we do get an easement there, it doesn't hinder her use of that property. I have met with county staff over in Martinez. They think it's a great location. They're in support of that site. And they've indicated to me that they feel it would not hinder her use of the property. But she wants a letter from the community development director stating that. So he's on vacation right now, so that's something else I'll be working on as well. Moving down into the middle, there's Slifer Park. I have met with County Public Works Department. To the right of the park, just behind the basketball courts, there's a nice half acre of land there that I've spoken to Justin about that we feel pretty confident we can fit in a well site and then screen around the entire facility except for the gate, of course, with this oleander or something else we thought would be good to block these facilities. County staff is agreeable. I've met with right-of-way department. They feel that it's 90% certain in their minds that they would grant us an easement for that for approximately $10,000. That would include staff time and the granting of the easement and things like that. So those are just wanted to give you an update as to where we were with trying to identify a viable location for Well 8. So that's really all I have. I don't know if Justin has anything else to add, but of course he would be involved with making sure that we have the connecting pipelines that need to go into the street to connect to our existing water mains.
So once you get through your analysis, I'm assuming part of that analysis will be a cost benefit for each one, correct?
Yeah, I think first at this stage, it is kind of a feasibility. Are they interested in my just spearheading that? What's the cost?
Okay, get it. And then eliminate any site that can't be.
Exactly.
They'll waste our time with it. Yeah.
Exactly. Precisely.
There's a range of sites that are all equally kind of favorable on the acquisition side. Mm-hmm. Then I would say, yeah, we would compare them in terms of cost benefit analysis, any piping or electrical work, you know, the physical construction.
How, from this point here to the next time you bring it to us, what time frame do you think you're
in? To defer Mike on that one.
Yeah, if you wanted to move on the Slifer Park site right now, I think the county would be willing to start negotiations for that easement. The other ones are going to take a bit of time. The school superintendent, for example, his comment back to me was, you know, we're not using that property for anything else.
I don't see pressing need to make a decision right away. I think we could allow whatever time it takes to fully analyze each site. I don't think we're in dire need to be well right at this moment. I couldn't justify moving forward without knowing the other site.
Exactly. Yes, and we have actually, you'll see by the school, Justin has a green circle there where it says Well 8 Option 1. That's actually East Bay Mud property, and I have reached out to them. There's no warm, fuzzy feeling from East Bay Mud to grant us an easement. Their response was, well, it's going to reduce the value of our property. So I'm still trying to communicate with them, but some of these sites, yeah.
If your property is too big, I wouldn't even bother going there.
Right.
If you can't get it locally, you're not going to get it out of headquarters.
Yeah. Some of these sites are outside of our district boundary. I have been in communication with Luann Texera, the executive officer at LAFCO, and she's going to get back to me on her feelings because there is, LAFCO does have a policy regarding development in the Ag Corps. But this is not development, it's a well, so she's going to get back to me with how she feels about it.
Oh, do you think, 60,
90 days? 60, 90 days, we should be able to come back and give you a pretty good update as to where things are.
Sooner the better, but whatever it takes.
Yeah, I think sooner is better.
Yes.
For a couple of reasons. One, we're engaged with a bunch of other agencies to get into a groundwater management plan, and we want to take a well.
Yeah.
So before they have input on our digging a well, we want to get that done.
Okay. All right.
And I'd like to ask one more question of Justin.
Well, no, I fully support that comment you just made because after this well, every other well will be a replacement well unless there's some major growth in the system. And
probably.
Replacement wells are going to be much easier from that standpoint of approval of other people who might have a say in the groundwater basin. Replacement wells categorized differently than a new well.
That's why I'm putting this on a fast track.
Yeah, that's fine.
Also, also there was a potential comment that having the well at the north end of town provided us an ability to potentially tap into the East Bay mud line if we needed to in case of an emergency. Is that even a viable thought or not anymore?
In terms of the that was a part of the reason why we were interested in the East Bay mud property to begin with, was that there was some tie-in concept, right? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it would depend on what that concept is, and it's still kind of really high level. So no, I would say it right now it's not a viable near-term thing. You know, it'd be more if the East Bay Mud wanted to use the groundwater supplies when there was, you know, a drought period, and then in exchange they would provide, they would either pay for it or provide an exchange of their water, you know, when they had surplus supplies, but that would be their water, surface water, and it would require developing surface water treatment, which would be a lot more expensive than building groundwater.
So I guess what I'm asking is part of the cost-benefit analysis, how close we are to their pipeline, and it's not really, is what I'm trying to do at this particular point.
No, it's not. I mean, obviously closer is better because then you have less pipeline costs to deliver to that. But I mean, the concept of sharing water with them is much bigger than just building a pipeline. If that, you know, I think the there's a lot more complexity to doing that, especially in light of there being this, you know, Sigma and the groundwater having some kind of agreement for conjunctive use of some outside agency where your water is going to be essentially used outside of the basin. So, the pipeline would be as big as that.
Thanks.
So, is there one or two locations, you don't have to tell me what location, is there one or two that just get you really excited?
You know, they're all really viable. They're close to the large water mains, which is why we picked those locations. So if Maven came out and said, yes, this is going to work, I think we would be in great shape.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say the Starkville Park, the pro is that it's already a developed area. It is slightly not the floodplain, which when you go outside on the other side of the county road, there might be more earthwork construction. And then the con from Starkville Park, or the drawback would be that it's not quite as big as the other site, so we would be designing something that's it would still work. And this photo that we put up in this, that you put in the, on the map,
schedules are updated in this permit, and I can go over the blueprinting. But one of the things that they're doing that's different for us than other people is we have an education limit. We also have a very, very low ammonia limit. And the two together are causing the master plan to be a little consternation in terms of the risk of violation. So we're commenting back here to try and get them to back off that ammonia limit. And we found some basis for arguing that in their own data. So we'll see what happens. At the moment, talking to Tyson, they're not even listening to that argument. They only want technical things for those public. So I don't know how well it can be. If they go public, we may want to go up again in person, like we did last time, and argue this out in person and see where it gets us, you know, depending on what the draft comes out. So those are the two big things that we argue. There's a bunch of technical stuff in here that is just more of just getting the permit right in terms of what you're saying. There's some confusion on a couple of things, and we clean that up. And then there's some important dates that we need to be aware of here. In the denitrification project, you want a financial plan by the end of December this year. You know, and so now it doesn't have to be a complicated plan, but there are, on the denitrification project coming forth now, we're getting into hard dates. You know, the door's closing on studying and thinking, and it's go out and do it, you know, very quickly. Our first thing that we need to do would be a financial plan. The financial plan can simply state we're going to go full of bonds and we're going to erase that way.
And did that date change since last time?
No, it's basically the same as last time. But it's being renewed and it's, you know, it's hard now. It's going to be real. So what we've done is put together these comments, Bernie's reviewed them, and Mike's reviewed them, Stan Tate's reviewed them, Mike reviewed them. They're basically ready to go. We wanted the board and the committee to have an opportunity to comment. So they're technically due today by 5 o'clock today, but I called Tyson and said they're going to go Friday and they agreed that we'll make a comment Friday. So that's, you know, if there's anybody here or even a board that just wants to throw more thing on here or comment on it, we can do that. But we'll make it due by the end of this day Friday. Yeah.
Indeed. The denitrification limit or level, does that change? Basically what we were.
Yeah, that's the same as before, and so is the ammonia limit, the same as before. We've been writing to them for 4 years about the ammonia limit. We were writing every time you send a report, we complain about the ammonia limit.
Okay.
But the same numbers as in our previous permit. We're now technically arguing that based on their data, we should have a little bit higher ammonia limit. And really what we're trying to do is we're trying to reduce risk for the town, because if you need a limit, and we're right at the limit of what we can technically design to, you know, what can go wrong, and you know about it.
Right.
Yeah, you know. So we're trying to get a little breathing they're not really in the mood to argue minutiae. The worst that they would do is just kick it back and say, have staff look at it and not proceed. But most of the time, they're in production mode at the board level.
All right.
Yeah. It's an all-day affair for them, and they're just lined up one after another. Right. Public hearing after public hearing.
There's some strategy. Okay, thank you.
So that's the update on the permit, if you have any comment. I got the same update we did at the board tonight.
Yeah, that was my only concern. I think, based on what you just told us, the ammonia level is too low.
Yeah. I mean, technically, we can meet it in the master plan, which is what we're going to talk about next. But we're, you know, there's not a lot of margin. There's not a lot of margin for error. We'd have to build more margin for error.
We don't need to be the pioneer on 0.7.
Yeah.
Because if we have to do that, then they turn around and go to everybody else.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay.
So that's the easy term.
All right. We'll move on to the diffuser permitting. Sequel.
Okay. So on diffuser permitting, we're stalled out. And you might recall that we had a discussion 2 months ago related to the Army Corps of Engineers wants an initial study done, and they want CEQA done again on the diffuser. Everyone else need to get on the ground. So 2 months ago, we came back and said, okay, the Army Corps wants an initial study done for the Final 3 permit, and they want CEQA picked up. We, in here, discussed in the past, the town would do kind of these initially negative decks for CEQA themselves. The CEQA is not the problem. A negative declaration or a small negative declaration for CEQA is a big deal. The problem is the initial study that they want done on the Army Corps permit meets federal requirements, you know. So initially we were thinking, well, okay, Virgil's gone, who might do it? We talked to Mike, asked Mike if he was comfortable sort of doing the CEQA stuff, which he could do, but not the initial study on the Army Corps permit, no experience with that. So right now, all the permitting is stopped as the Army Corps is waiting for us to prepare the environmental document to go with the submittals from Roy Parsons. Roy Parsons has gotten their work ready. So we have a proposal from Worley Parsons, which is that amazing, Worley Parsons. It's the same proposal I had 2 months ago. And I'm bringing it back around saying, as far as I can tell, we don't have a choice. We need to authorize them to proceed on preparing these documents so that we can keep the process running. It's $27,000.
Is it taxable? They write tax exclusive.
It's not that. It's professional services.
That's what I thought. It makes you worry, though, when they put that in paren.
Yeah.
How much work have they done for us today? How much money?
Well, not a lot. You know, they started them on that we did a report for like $30,000 related to the options. You know, we wrote a report on the options, WABC option. And then after that, we authorized them to prepare the permits. And I think they have a contract like $25,000 for the permits or something like that, you know. So they're halfway through that. now. We had staff had some discussions outside this committee. We brought the scan tech and had some discussions outside this meeting. You know, there were several alternatives considered here, and that's the least cost. $7.8 million was the least cost alternative of the alternatives considered. There were also some alternatives that staff brought up that were not specifically written up by Stanton for one reason or another because they didn't make the initial cut. But I prepared a memo at the end. At the end of Stanton's memo, I wrote a memo called Pre-Screening Memorandum, which sort of talked about other things that were brought up that they discussed, but weren't analyzed in detail by Stanton for one reason or another. So those alternatives that were brought up, you know, one person threw out, why don't we use plant one as the anoxic base in? Let's use plant one after and move the stuff over to plant two. And then we discussed, well, it's not technically feasible given the size of the separate piping and let's go back and forth. And the other limitations, it would cost a huge amount. We're talking about twin 42-inch pipes all the way from one end to the other, plus pump stations and stuff. It becomes immediately rejected. But we wanted to document that we looked at some anything that anyone brought up, if anyone had an idea, let's look at this, look at this. We wanted to address it, but we didn't need to address it in a very formal manner like Stantec did. If it was obvious, yeah, it just isn't going to work for obvious reasons. So that's where my memo case in. And then the other question, well, why can't we use earthen bases at plant two? You know, build earthen bases and make it a little cheaper that way. It turns out that if you go out in the ground at all, the cost really escalates. Because we have to build a whole very, very large pump station then, plus the cost of building whatever it is out of the ground. And then earthen bases specifically would have to be pretty shallow so they don't become a hazard. Like you make a big hydrant berm, you know, a 10-foot hydrant dam. It's not just an earthen basin, then you get a whole new set of regulations. So you're limited by 5 feet if you're out of the ground with an earthen basin. And so that makes the footprint really big, you know, so then it doesn't fit. So everything had pretty much a reason why we couldn't bring it up. The other one was change the effluent discharge from old river to on-site percolation ponds. So Bernie's brought this up before. If we didn't have to go to old river with our discharge, if we could percolate in the ground, which there's plants in the Central Valley that do that. They don't have a river next to them. They just percolate in the ground. You have much more relaxed limits on your discharge. You know. The initial evaluation is there's the groundwater is very high in plant one or plant two, and the soil is clay, underlying layers of peat, but it's clay, so you don't perk through clay, it's too dense. So we can't do it anywhere on the soils of plant one or two. So that pretty much killed it. However, Mike's been looking around if maybe there's some areas nearby that might still be viable. And we're looking into that. Maybe that's viable. The reality is, though, even if we find that land, what that means is you're pumping all the wastewater to wherever that is. You got to buy it. You got to own it. And then we got to permit it. That's going to take several years. I mean, even if you knew it was like lined up, like here it is, it drains. You have the technical engineering course right there. You have to modify your NPDES permit to do that. And that's a process. That's not an instantaneous thing. So. It's not available on site. It wasn't before either. We knew that, but we did address it here. We're going to go through the motions to just, you know, okay, see if it still might be out there available, and we'll see what happens. But my personal belief is the technical challenges and the time scale aren't going to allow that as an alternative. Like, we just couldn't do it in a year or something. I mean, you have to do, first off, you have to do your studies just to evaluate percolation rates, stuff like that. You have to petition to change your NPDES discharge location. You have to do an EIR on that. You know, I mean, you have to go through the process.
So the analysis right now is to put two of them in, one in plant one and one in plant
two. One in front of each oxidation.
Right.
Yeah, so if there's three bases, one in front of each oxidation.
And that's with the assumption that we were going to retain plant one as kind of the backup process.
Right. Right, so the same memo does a capacity analysis. Like, okay, once we make all these changes, what's the capacity of the plant's doing? And so here's the long and short of it. On paper, under worst case scenarios, in winter time, when the water's the coldest, you technically need plant one to calc out and know that you have capacity. You need to keep it. Okay?
can, as you're building this, you're putting money into plant one, you could put that money into plant two to build. It might cost a little more, but the end result
is that
the improvement you're making in plant one, you could build that over in plant two and have one location with the same backup and maybe a little added cost, but a benefit overall.
Right, you put this right. The question is, can we build a third ditch in plant two? Right. It would be a third ditch and two fire cars. We'd have to build a plant two. There's physical space to do it. We left that space there in the master plan.
Yes.
Okay. We, in the previous master plan, when we did that, the evaluation of that analysis was about $13 million total to accomplish essentially moving plant one without the full compensation, but moving plant one to plant two. Right now, repairs to plant one and the oxidation ditch improvements are running about half that cost, you know, maybe $6 million or something total. Because we have to put in not the repairs, there's repairs plus the denaturation ditch we have, right? So there's two things you've got to do. So it's running less than that value. But we can certainly bring that up again. I mean, if the desire of the town is to decommission plant one and move it all to plant two, it's physically possible. It's just a matter of dollars. But on paper, those dollars are about twice what it is to keep plant one.
Well, there's a lot of benefits in closing down plant one. I know we're looking at security and health for plant two, and I'm sure you're going to look at plant one. And if you continue to build and add more money to plant one, the necessity was great.
Now is the time to decide that I agree because you're about to put some real money in plant one.
Yeah.
I have no doubt about it.
And months ago, I had brought up, let's see if we can, by any way, do it in plant two.
Okay.
And not necessarily at this point shut down the plant, maybe we're not ready, but adding millions of dollars into plant one when this is all said and done and operational, do we really have the benefit of the
right.
total money that we invest?
Right. I can pull those numbers together when you're looking at like 13 versus 6. That's the premium to move.
Okay. It doesn't sound practical, but I would like to see that.
Okay, all right. Okay, I can do that.
Question. Are we now up to $6 million? Because 2 weeks ago
No. It
was $4 million.
No. So what it is it's $8 million for denitrification
right.
at plant one and plant two.
Okay.
Every single ditch gets something. That's $8 million. Okay. We're going to be likely improvements at plant one. I think we're carrying $3 to $4 million.
No, 1.5.
1.5. Okay.
I keep telling you, it's 1.5.
All right. So. Separate from denitrification, because if you look at the memo here, the cost for plant two denitrification, like installing denitrification based on the plant two, is like $2 million.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got a $2 million improvement. Actually, it's on page. Let me just find the page here. Yeah. So you have on page, you got concrete maximum basic raises, ditch one. So for ditch one, it's $2.6 million.
Which
right.
page?
So it's on page 11.35.
35.
11.35.
Let us all get there.
Okay. Bottom right hand corner, you said 11.35. Agenda item on these two. So here we have table 11.6, right? So we have basically three ditches. And the total for each ditch is about 2.6. Alright? So for denitrification, if plant one was working perfectly and everything was perfectly fine out there, you'd spend $2.6 million for denitrification. Okay. We know there's some physical deficiencies in plant one. And we've been carrying budgets for physical. One of them was a new MCC. We have to replace the MCC over there. There's a generator issue as well. And we talked about whether we replace the clarifiers or whether we do lightning and some of the clarifiers. If it's kind of a backup, can we get by with some light maintenance? If it's kind of just a ditch repair, if we're not going to use it hard, but we want it as a reliable backup, maybe we don't have to go full out and fix everything, right? Originally, in the old master plan, the original version master plan, I think we carried, there was like 4 million improvements recommended over there that we could make changes to if you really wanted, like, we're going to run it all the time, changes. The discussion has always been, if we're not going to run it all the time, and the reality is we're going to run plant two most of the time, but we need plant one to operate when we need it, then, you know, like the 1.5 million, we're going to verify that number, but that 1.5 million is the minimum we've got to replace the MCC and do some of the satellite work just to make sure that it's reliable standby, I'll say. Not reliable run for 10 years straight, reliable standby, right? Plant two runs 24/7 for the next 20 years, right? Plant one, we've
minimum to get minimum.
Yes.
But the 4.5 includes the denitrification.
Yes, it does.
So when we're thinking about it in terms of budgeting for this, we have to look at the totality of the cost of the entire project.
Right.
And you're saying it's 10 to 12 million.
Right. So right now, let's say denitrification is 8.
Right.
So just denitrification is 8 million bucks.
Right.
Anything that we spend to rehab plant 1 is extra. Let's say it's 2 million, that's 10. Okay. There's another miscellaneous improvements here and there that are popping out of the master plan that are going to pop up of things you got to fix. One of the things with UV, not a lot of money, we've got to do some work on the UV. So that together, like I said, you're past 10. You're likely in that range of 10 to 12 for this project that's coming. Now, one thing I'll say is we've carried 8 for United. We've carried 8 for United. That's been the CIP forever. And repairs of 1.5 of these have been in the CIP. That's already in the CIP.
Yeah, we're in it's in the CIP, but it's not in our rate study.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's why we need the new rate.
So a lot of detailed numbers, but the top level, just look at denitrification using plant 1, the whole bailiwick, whatever you got to do to bring plant 1 up, and meet the denitrification, what's the cost?
We're probably
10 million. 10 million.
10 million.
10 million. 10 million. Okay, well, it's 12, 14.
Well, you asked for very specifically just 2 days, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that.
Did I bring 2 million out someplace?
Well, we're going through the master plan right now. There's been some deficiencies here and there. And
all right. So, 10 left. Now, if it was all to be done in plant 2, what's the total? Same thing. Same thing.
If it's all done in plant 2, likely.
D9 and.
D9 is solely 6. Now, D9 is only going to be 5.5. Okay. Yeah, 5.5. Yeah, it'll be 5.5. The nuance that you get to the new clarifiers and the DNAC for that. So actually, we need 3 DNACs. That's still 8. It's likely going to be at least, well, Jeff had 13, they had 13 last time we developed it, plus 8 plus 13, 21.
So
21.
21 million?
Yes. And I might shave that a little bit, depending on whatever, but it's not 12. It's 20. Right now, on paper.
So that's 4.5 million. That you were going to put into there, you're factoring that in
right
here.
Yeah.
And plus, the
right.
Issue.
Remember, even though I build a third ditch over here, I still need to build a denite basin for it.
So you're saying the build is over there, over and above, bringing plant 1 up to the minimum level, which is about 5.5 million.
Yeah, it might be 6.
Okay. For new construction.
For new construction.
And when you get done, you have full backup at the facility.
Yes, on the south side.
You don't have people traveling across Highway 4. You don't have this to maintain. You'll still have some function.
Oh, there's definite operational benefits, absolutely. It's just strictly a dollars issue versus benefits. Now, there are operational benefits, and then you just have to decide, is that worth it?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like it, but it's worth looking at and understanding it. So
I can do the math a little better for you if you want. I understand your question. I'm doing numbers based on previous study, but I can actually put data together and come back
with that. I think that would be a good idea to want to spend a lot of time on. It would be an update to the entire board, because we've got to make a decision to spend money at plant 1 or not spend money at plant 1. We've got to justify why we're doing that. And it also will help the public.
One additional question. We have the time, and I know it's getting cut short, but we have time to do plant 1, bring it up to speed, and meet the denitrification requirement overall.
Right.
If we were to decide to not use plant 1 and build into plant 2.
We have time for either. We have time for either, but we got to get on.
Okay.
Especially if we're going to move. So right now, I can start work right away on one ditch, but right now I have to build one first, right? So we can do it, but we got to get on.
When will this be right to bring before the board for a decision?
All right, so, before a decision, this is an update, on the chapter. And basically, the chapter 11 is written. We're moving on. Now, it's draft. They're waiting for comments back from us. And we've gone through some of these alternatives. We haven't gone through this alternative, which was, what about plant 1 and plant 2? Should we move it all over there? I can get that. We can come up with the cost of that. I don't know if it'd be in the same chapter or just a
there's no board meeting between, I mean, committee meeting between now and the next board meeting, or even the,
it would be the other one.
Right.
Yeah, well, I don't think we need to see it ahead of time.
That's why we drive it.
Right.
So schedule it for the mid-month, August mid-month board meeting. And we'll be looking for some sort of a decision.
We've got to make a decision.
Yeah, we, yeah, we got to put the debt, yeah, we got to put the debt, we're going to do it, we're not going to do it, or whatever.
Yeah.
Is there any way to...
Can you please include into that the methanol plant, because that's still a possibility that we might, I mean, we want to run it for a year, but that's still a possibility that we might have to spend money on.
The only way to do that is as soon as he prepares the report, to send it out.
So, I don't want to leave that off the table, and then...
Which we can do, it's him that gets the report then.
So, Granger, there's a lot here to digest, and especially for the board members that don't attend this, so the earlier you have even preliminary information,
then
that might get out to the board.
Okay.
That would be helpful, and allow them to be prepared.
Okay, so, I'm not sure if that's the update, but most of the dollars, it's not a cheap project.
Is the geotech going to be for both plants?
Yes. The add-on for plant one at the moment isn't that much, so I don't think that matters. Of course, I can make it as a separate add-on. Some people need it.
What was the, while we're on that, was it early on a thought taking the oxidation ditch, cutting it back, and build that denitrification component into that?
Right. So there's a process called simultaneous nitrification denitrification where you use the volume condition of both processes. That was evaluated in detail chapter. So it was a lower cost alternative because you're not building new structure, but it's just not going to be reliable as a single process.
I knew it was out there.
It was. So there were three alternatives in detail evaluated in Chapter 11. One was simultaneous nitrification, denitrification. We also at one time evaluated using the filters, but that was kicked out a long time ago. And then they looked at above ground basins, below ground basins, cheaper basins.
So Greg, I think what he was referring to, something we spoke about in our conference call, was take physically separate part of the oxidage, if you could, to make that the denitrification.
Yeah, we don't have the volume then.
Right, that's the answer to the question.
It
would reduce our capacity.
Yeah.
That's why that can't happen.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make that clear, because that was different to what his question.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if to one step further, if we took plant one and we did the same thing in the opposition district plant one, and we ran plant one a little bit more, that would make up for the capacity. Does that lower our overall cost enough to even be worthwhile?
The issue is we have to look at capacity with stuff out of service. So we look at capacity with
right.
Running out of service.
All right, so if we did
so,
that, then
yeah.
We don't have an out of service.
Right, problem. Yeah, we don't have an out of service. And one of the vulnerabilities the district had is, and this is common in oxidation ditch plants, the developer didn't make cheap, you build one oxidation ditch and then you go away. 20 years later, you can't repair your oxidation if you don't have a process, if you try and take it out of service, kind of thing. So that was addressing the original question.
Another pro on keeping plant one.
Well, at least have the three ditches, whether it's plant one or plant two. There's no doubt that plant one. Plant one's 40 years old. The MCC is 40 years old. It's built in the 70s. It's almost coming on 50 years old. Plant one's a 50-year-old plant. If we were going to keep it, I would say, if I needed that 24/7 on plant one, we would be spending more money there.
But even now, once you open it up, it's like any construction.
It's like a 40-year-old house. It's a 40-year-old house. Okay, it's a 40-year-old house. That's what it is. All right? It's a 40-year-old house.
There's that right. Exposure.
All right. And that's the $4 million we were talking about earlier, right?
Yes. Right.
Versus the $1.5 million.
Versus $1.5 million.
Right. $4 million is to make it robust.
More robust.
Right.
Right. Exactly. And the master plan's not identifying this thing, also. But at the minimum, we know for a fact it's $1.5 million just to keep the wheels on as a backup plan. That's where we're at. It may be a little bit more limited.
Okay.
You may decide to make it more robust if you're going to keep it too. That's another
issue. Well, I think the question that I would have back to ratepayers in a rate study. And where are we on that process?
We can't initiate a rate study until we know what the costs are so that they can put those costs into the rate study.
Give us a
but
couple
we,
months.
We,
we'll have the rest of the costs worked out in a couple months,
yeah.
And then you can do a rate study.
As soon as we get that, we're prepared to pull the trigger, bring it to the board, and pull the trigger on approving the contract and rate study.
Process to bring it back and decide when we raise the rate from it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're raising rates. I can solve that for you.
We're raising
rates. Yeah, but by how much?
We did intentionally it was left out the last rate study. We knew we needed it. We knew we needed it.
Yeah.
It was intentionally left out last rate study. And that's what happened.
It should have been in the
Let's put it there. We've known about 8 and 1.5 for a long time. We've known about that. Those two numbers for a long time.
Yeah, but we have a number of costs because it fluctuated up and down.
Yeah.
We could have estimated that. Okay, is there any future item that we haven't crossed over? Staff or anything?
No, I'm sure we will with the next meeting.
Okay.
We'll probably have updates in the wastewater master plan every meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Nice job of getting through the agenda.
Yeah.
All right.